Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to get to your Twitter questions, as always, in that final segment. So keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. To start out with, great to have another win to talk about. 2 weeks in a row, first time in a while that the team has been able to string a couple wins in a row together. What do you think the significance of that is, not just for the, obviously, playoff picture and what the season is, but just to know that you can get a couple wins in a row has to be big.
I think what it is it's gratifying for these guys because they work so hard. You'll hear coaches and players say it all the time. You work so hard for an entire week for one goal.
Yep.
And when you don't get it, especially when it's those types of games like the one in Buffalo and the one against New England where you really felt like you had a great chance to win and it slips away at the end,
mm-hmm.
that's a terrible feeling. I mean, it's awful. I know how bad they feel after weeks like that. So it's gratifying, I'm sure, to put in the work, to have a plan, and to think going into the game that if we can do this, we can win and have it happen. I mean, Coach Cutter has told them, if we can avoid turning the football over, I think you'll see we're going to win. We're going to win a lot of games. And that, you know, that's what happened in Miami. That was the difference in the game. And so as in terms of the playoff picture, it's still, you know, obviously a long shot. It would be disingenuous to say otherwise,
right.
But they in there believe it. So when you're sitting at 2-6 and you go, we're not giving up, we're still going for this, and then you win your next two, obviously the confidence, the belief is going to continue to grow. And if they can get one more, especially in Atlanta against a good Falcons team, then I would think you would see these guys' confidence go through the roof, and that can build on
That's
it.
True.
And you know how people a couple weeks ago were asking, does this team have an identity, and does this team have chemistry in the locker room? And I agree completely with Coach Cutter's answer, paraphrasing here. That stuff comes from winning.
Yeah.
You know, people think this team comes together in the locker room, and that's why they won. No, you start winning, and that's when you get that confidence and that chemistry.
That's why
they
say winning solves all things instead of the other way around.
So
it is challenging, though, because you do have to have that confidence to win a lot of times. But you get the confidence from winning, and it's like this vicious.
Yeah, you have to string
catch 22.
You have
here.
To string it together and let it build on itself, you know. And we started the season 2-1, but you know that included a really bad game in Minnesota, and I'm not sure that was enough to get on. So when things turned bad, there was it kind of built in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
So
and even with the hurricane at the very beginning,
that didn't
help. I think the season it was hard for them to get into that normal rhythm and, like you said, get the momentum built.
Absolutely.
A loss in Minnesota is one thing, but a bad loss like that kind of killed whatever momentum you felt like you had. So I would agree with that. And to get a road win, I know obviously it was a huge thing for
the
team as well because that hadn't happened yet. And I know that as much as I think that's more of a coincidence than anything of just what games went what ways, that is another kind of almost mental thing, I bet, of just you start feeling that stuff because, of course, then people start asking you about it and you start thinking about it. So I'm sure that was kind of a relief to get that over with as well.
They got asked that. They get asked that a lot. You know, like, so like you said, I'm sure they get tired of those questions and it makes them think about it. You know, you'll listen to them and say it's not that we can't win on the road. We won 5 games on the road last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we can't. But so they're not lacking in confidence to be able to do it. But it is like a monkey on their back.
Mm-hmm.
They very much want it, so it's good to have that off.
That's huge. And so looking at this game, you know, obviously we found out the news yesterday that Jameis is out another week for sure. And so looking at how Ryan Fitzpatrick performed and the offense overall, how would you evaluate him specifically and then what that could potentially mean about going into Atlanta this week without Jameis again?
You know, I see it described, and it's probably relatively true, that Ryan Fitzpatrick had a good game with its ups and downs in Miami, right? But, I mean, look at it at the end. 275 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and the Bucs didn't turn the ball over once. And, you know, if you look at maybe what he complete around 60% of his passes, but as Coach Cutter accurately points out, there were 2 or 3 drops, and there was at least 4 occasions where he threw the ball away, which was what Coach wanted him to do in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said how hard it is, even for experienced quarterbacks, to throw the ball away when they should throw the ball away. And he did it, and so, you know, there were some plays that looked a little ugly, but, I mean, I'll take 275 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and when the game was on the line and he had to make, like, 3 key throws, he made them all.
Yeah, and that was huge. That final drive, to me, was such a huge thing for this team, like we've talked about, of the mental side of what kind of can make the snowball effect for wins, to know you can do a drive like that.
Yeah,
seems
we
like,
needed that.
Yeah, you need to know you're capable of that, and to have it be with your backup quarterback and rookies being huge parts of it. I mean, that's got to be such a confidence builder.
I would say that the Buccaneers have done that 3 times this year, so they should feel like they can do it. The Giants game was a last-minute drive to win it, and then in Buffalo they really did it, but then the Bills trumped them with the scoring drive to win it. You know, they'd made the drive they needed to do to come back, and then, you know, there was the unfortunate Adam Humphries fumble, and the Bills ended up winning. I think three times this offense has done well at the end, and so they should be confident they can. The problem, of course, as it showed in that Buffalo game and has almost happened in the Miami game, is the defense has not been as good at closing out games. It did it definitely against mm-hmm. the Jets, although even in that game they were unhappy about giving up that late touchdown. You know, the Buccaneers were winning 20-7, and in the second half they really had a difficult time holding on to that lead. Part of that was because the offense was ineffective, and so the defense kept having to come back on the field. But I'm sure the defense wants to finish games better than they have.
Right, that's very true.
And in that last, you know, in Miami, fortunately, we scored with virtually no time left, so the defense didn't have to make one last stand. And I'm sure they would have been confident in that situation, but the results of some games this season would have certainly made those of us viewing it nervous.
Yeah, that's true. And looking at the defense in that situation, I know a lot of people were wondering about, it seemed like in the second half, the offense was a little bit more conservative, potentially. And, I mean, I know you're up at halftime, so is that something I think I've seen a lot of questions from fans about why the first half and the second half seem so different in terms of just production, mm-hmm. it seemed. Do you believe that was intentional? Was it something about the overall game plan that just kind of changed what the Dolphins were doing?
I don't think the lead was big enough, especially after the Dolphins got a couple field goals, that we were trying to go conservative. I think we were trying to get at least one more score to put it out of range. The offense just really fell out of a rhythm and stopped. You know, it comes down to the same thing Coach Gutter has to say every, like, Monday, Wednesday, is it's execution. They just failed to execute. And the running game just couldn't get anything going once again. And so it was hard for the Buccaneers. They had a lot of things planned, as Coach Cutter put it, for the second half. They had a lot of more passing plays that they wanted to get to. And you saw several of those on that last game-winning drive. But they just didn't get to it because they couldn't. You needed one more first down to be able to get three more plays. Mm-hmm. And they just weren't getting that. So, no, I don't believe that was a particularly conservative approach, and that's what happened. I think they just fell into a little bit of a rut and didn't get out of it until, fortunately, just in time. But part of the problem was Jay Cutler leaving the game, and they're trotting in to start the second half was Matt Moore, and that's when I was like, oh, my goodness. Because Matt Moore is like the poor man's Case Keenum when it comes to playing against the Buccaneers.
That's so funny.
We all know what Case Keenum has done to us.
Which I feel better about now that they've played so
well this season.
They're
doing better against other teams. Yeah,
thank you, Case Keenum,
for hurting somebody else.
Besides just us.
But Matt Moore, who has just been a backup for essentially his whole career in Carolina and Miami, he's had to play against us like three other times, and he's beaten us three times.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be four.
Yep.
He threw for like 290 yards in the second half, and it was like, oh, here we go again with Case.
Yep.
And I, you know, that's obviously, there really can't be much meaning to that.
No.
But it felt like it was
going to
be a problem.
It feels like a big coincidence.
When I saw him coming in, I was like, I don't feel good about this.
I don't
this.
Like it.
Especially the way they were just dominating Jay Cutler.
Yeah, that's true, which we definitely need to talk about that. I mean, all four takeaways in the first half. That's incredible, and I know that obviously they didn't capitalize on them as much as they would have liked to offensively, but to have four takeaways from your defense in the first half has to be very reassuring for the defense that they are capable mm-hmm. of producing that.
Well, and okay, so again, their first two third downs, Jay Cutler threw interceptions, and they were third and eight, third and nine type things, and that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get them in those long third downs. You pin your ears back on the pass rush, move them around, make them make a mistake because of the pressure. And that's what happened to some extent. I mean, Justin Evans' interception really was just a remarkable play on
his
part.
That was incredible.
But Quan Alexander's was Jay being forced to run and then thrown back across the field and Quan reading it and jumping the route. So that formula worked against the Jets, and it worked in the first half against Miami. But in the second half, for some reason, we got them in tons and tons and tons of long third downs, but they kept converting them. And not just like 14 yards on third and 11s, like 45-yard gains, 61-yard gains. So Coach Cutter said the problem there was, the obvious thing is there was less pass rush in the second half than there had been on Jay Cutler, less pressure on the quarterback. But apparently there were problems in what you would call zone drops. So you're playing zone defense, and receivers start to get farther down the field. Certain guys are supposed to drop into certain zones, and the coordination of that didn't go as well as it should have. But that's not so terrible since we won, because it certainly seems like a fixable problem.
Okay. All right. We still have a lot more coming up here on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite, including getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
I don't know nobody's going to let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
man. We call this the jungle. Yeah. It's our house today, man. Yeah. Let's be great, man. Let's be great. Let's be great. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing round throw. Football touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James is going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, technique, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're still going to have another segment after this, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. So I know we were talking a little bit about the takeaways of the defense and how some of them were a little bit more
fixable.
Lucked into. Yeah, that they were things that you can fix versus not. So looking forward, how much do you think you can replicate those takeaways? Was this a thing that the Dolphins did that we did, and how much can we expect, you know, whether it was the sacks from the week before or the takeaways this time, how much is continuing?
You can throw out the last one. That was just a fluky thing when they were lateraling it around. But four turnovers is still very good. The interceptions, look at last year. We didn't have a ton of turnovers in the first half and then figured stuff out and started getting them in the second half, and it continued from game to game. There seems to be a little bit of a momentum thing with turnovers. I think I've seen that in many different seasons. There's anomalies. There's games where you don't get any, and there's games where you get five. But but over the course of the final 8 weeks of the season, it would not surprise me if the Buccaneers do something similar to last year when they had they were the league leaders in the second half in turnovers, takeaways. Maybe we won't get that, but better. Mm-hmm. And that'll make all the difference in the world. It's probably going to be critical this week in Atlanta. When you talk about interceptions, again, a lot of it has to do with getting pressure on the quarterback and making him make mistakes. Fumbles, actually, for a guy like Lavonte David, are a skill.
That's not a
talent.
Fluke.
If anybody wants to watch the interview I did with him last week, we decided to do an interview with Lavonte last week instead of head coach in the exclusive thing because he's been playing so well and everybody's been talking about him. I thought he could speak about the turnaround of the defense. And I asked him, the forcing turnovers, is this just fluky or is it a specific skill you can work on? And he told me, It's something that he works on, and the moment he tries to arrive and get the ball out is just when the running back is about to hit the ground, because you can't help it. You take one hand off the ball and put it on the ground, and it's at that moment he wants to strike the ball, and obviously he's pretty good at that time.
And that's like a split second, and he's moving and you're moving, and I mean it's just incredible that he can do that.
Yeah, but think back to the fumbles. I can picture at least three of them, and they've all been like that. Like the running back was getting real close to hitting the ground.
That's a great point.
Yeah,
that's pretty incredible. And you know he's obviously been playing incredibly well. You've talked about you think he might be the MVP of the defense so far this season.
Either him or Gerald McCoy.
And Gerald, that was my next thing I was going to bring up. Gerald had just a monster game on Sunday. It was a very Gerald McCoy-esque game. It's not always sacks, but it's everything.
Good point.
It's a little bit of everything. And so I think, what did you see from him in particular? And if people want to see, I know that Anthony Becht actually broke down a couple of Gerald's plays in film session this week, if people want to go look at that as well. He made some great points about why Gerald did it, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on the kind of game that Gerald had.
Well, I would say it's like you said, it was a great game, and if you're watching it, you may, and then you see the stat sheet, and then you might go, I thought he did a lot more than that. Mm. He had one sack, our only sack, but he had three quarterback hits. And did you realize? I did not realize this. He's tied for the league lead in quarterback hits.
Wow.
With Chandler Jones of Arizona. I did not know that.
I didn't either.
So he's obviously getting back there. I think he's been a little bit unlucky to only have five sacks. I'm surprised he doesn't have more, but it shows that he's just as good as he's ever been. You know, this guy's made the Pro Bowl 5 years in a row, and he should make it a sixth. And now that he's gotten three sacks in the last 2 weeks,
it helps his case.
That'll help a lot.
Which now is a good time to bring up that Pro Bowl voting is open. We do have the link on our website to do that. So obviously, Bucks fans need to get out there in force. It's right here in our backyard in Orlando again this year. So as we talk about guys like Levante and Gerald, who are very deserving,
vote for them.
Go on now.
Levante because he's got to beat those Von Miller outside linebacker types.
Yeah, which is so unfair in so many ways of the way that linebackers are evaluated,
yes,
the different defenses they're in. I feel like there should be, instead of it just being like a two different teams that play against each other, there should be even more categories of the types of linebackers.
They just need to call them edge rushers
and
outside linebackers.
That's true.
Because that's what they call them. That's what people draft. You hear draft nicks, you know, when they're evaluating draft prospects. They just call them edge rushers now.
Yeah.
Because there's three, four outside linebackers,
right,
and they're defensive ends, and they do the same thing.
Well, and like Noah Spence was a great example of that people were talking about. It all depended on where he went, where he got drafted, of whether he'd probably be called a defensive lineman or a linebacker.
Exactly. He's that size. He's a Von Miller size of
player. We should get rid of that whole...
It's an easy fix.
It is. Look at us. It'll just be solving the world's problems.
It'll probably be too late for Levante, though, because they'll do it like three or four years
from now.
Right when he retires. I mean, he'll still be playing then, but he will have missed opportunities.
Yeah.
He's been in the Pro Bowl now, so you get that whole Pro Bowl momentum. And I just think we just need to keep talking about him.
That's
as
true.
As much as possible.
That's our goal
he's
here.
So
make
good.
Sure you go out and vote for them.
He told me he wasn't perfectly 100% from after week one last year, the whole year. And
goodness.
He also had, you know, he had some tragedy in his personal life and stuff off the field that made it harder for him, and he just said he's fully healthy and no distractions, and so he's just playing like the Levante we always knew.
Yep, which is huge. And wanted to get back to the offense a little bit here and talk about Chris Godwin, and that we've had people asking about him all season, that he got talked about so much at training camp, and then we didn't see a ton from him earlier in the year, and then now because of Mike Evans' suspension, and then it looks like maybe that led to now just in general he's getting more chances, opportunities. I just want to hear your thoughts on if you thought that was kind of why that we just kind of got to see him, so he's a little bit more trusted now to be part
so
of the
people
offense.
Say, can't Chris Godwin get more playing time? Remember, when you talk about playing time, you tend to think he had only had one catch. Why isn't he getting playing time? If you want to know how much playing time a player's getting, look at his playing time.
Yeah.
Look at his snaps. He is getting more snaps.
Right.
The ball just can't always find him.
Mm-hmm.
He played 33% of the snaps in this last game, which is one of his highest totals of the year, other than the game where he started, which obviously is a completely different animal for Mike Evans. And the fact that they would call two plays, because I believe in at least one of them, the 24-yarder down that put us in field goal range, I believe in at least that one and probably the other one, he was the number one primary target. That you would call an absolutely critical game play for your rookie receiver in that moment.
It is amazing.
That's all you need to know about what the Buccaneers think about him. But it's the situation in general hasn't changed. You still have you're going to stop playing Mike Evans or DeShaun Jackson?
Right. Nope,
and Adam Humphries is great as what he does. So it's just a matter. And here's another thing. Get back to a point from earlier. In that second half, the offense completely bogged down. If you get a couple more first downs, then you're getting to more plays,
more
and there's
targets.
More footballs to throw around, and maybe Chris gets a couple more and Adam gets a couple more. The offense as a whole, a rising tide lifts all boats, right?
Yep, that's very true. I like that. And talking about another person that the team obviously trusts, Pat Murray, and just how
great that
felt to know that as you started marching on the field that, I don't know about you, but I wasn't worried. I was confident, and I thought when I saw we had the chance to just march down there and get a field goal, I was like, we got this.
Most importantly, he was confident.
Yeah, which is way more important than whether or not you and I are confident.
I got to be the first one to talk to him in the locker room, other than his teammates, afterwards, and I asked him if he had any doubt. He said, not one bit of doubt. He was 100% confident he was going to kick it right between the uprights, which he did. And, you know, every kicker's going to say he's confident. But don't you feel when he's saying it, he's kind of intense about it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not just, you know, I'm confident, I know I'm going to make every kick. I mean, He really is really
He's almost in, it's almost like he's insulted you even asked. He's like, well, yeah. Like, yeah. Of course I felt confident. Of course, I felt like I was going
to
make it.
That's what you want out of your kicker.
It is. It's very true. All right, we still have one more segment coming up, which is getting to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We're going to take a short break, and we'll get back to those in just a minute.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucs know how to shine.
Hey, hey, Tampa Bay, the Bucs know how to shine. Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs!
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Stand up.
Give a cheer for the Buccaneers.
Go Bucs!
Because we know we're on the top.
We stand up!
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Our first one comes from Daniel, and it's actually a question for us as compared to about the team. He said, when you guys travel with the team to road games, do you have a favorite stadium?
Do you have anything else on top of your head while I'm thinking, or do you want me
to haven't been to a lot of them. It's funny how it worked out of when I was with the Rams and then came here. Our road schedules were almost the same, so I missed a whole bit of, like, new stadiums. So I've done the NFC West a lot.
Sure.
And
let me see.
The NFC East a lot, too. So there's whole ones I'm – this year's been good, though, because I had never been to Buffalo before. I'd never been to Green Bay before or the Minnesota ones.
Green Bay is just fun because of how historic it feels. We're going to go to a new one this week, Atlanta. I'm looking forward to that because it's apparently pretty crazy.
Yeah, we got to do the new Minnesota.
I thought
earlier.
The new Minnesota stadium was fantastic.
Yeah, that's definitely now one of mine.
It's definitely up there.
I have to go with the Cowboys one, too. It's just, I mean, it's like a monstrosity landmark less than a stadium. It's just like a museum.
I know, but
it's like a football museum.
It feels so cowboy, though. I mean, I already didn't like the Cowboys. That's exactly what the Cowboys would do.
So much disdain.
Let's see, what else? Seattle. Seattle's cool.
Oh, yeah. Seattle might be it. I like
Seattle's
that with
cool.
the Hawk's Nest and the view of the downtown through the gap there.
I hated the fact that the Chargers left San Diego, but I'm glad we don't have to go back to that stadium because that was probably the worst prospects in the league. And the old San Fran stadium was horrendous as well.
That new one's pretty
cool. Denver is cool, as Alex off camera said. Yeah, those are probably the best ones.
Okay. Our next one, he wants to know, this is kind of related to what we were talking about with Godwin, and he was saying, do you see him getting more targets now with his production last week? That, as you said, it means other people are going to get less, but he's kind of asking, do you think he's earned that?
I'm ready for this one because I saw this question right before I came down here and I was working on today's mailbag, so I can't remember every single number, but if he or anybody else wants to go read that article a little later this afternoon, I'm breaking it down, and my answer is he already is seeing more playing time. If you look at it in terms of his snaps, not counting the Jets game, that's obviously an anomaly, but his snaps in the last, he's had three of his top four, other than the Jets game, snap percentages in the last 5 weeks. And what one thing I noticed in the last two games is that there's a much smaller gap between his snaps and those of Adam Humphries in the last two games. Previously, every game it was about 25 to 35. In the last couple of games, it's been like 15 and 10. Now, I do not want anybody to interpret that as me saying he's taking away Adam's job as the slot receiver. I do not feel that is the case. I just think they are finding a few more ways to use Chris Godwin. And if Chris Godwin is on the field, he's going to be taking snaps away from somebody else. The two most common lineup combinations that have featured Chris Godwin have also featured Adam Humphries. So he's not pushing Adam Humphries out of a job. But somebody's going to lose snaps if he gets more, and some of them are going to come from Adam Humphries. And I see that gap a little less in recent weeks, so I think Chris is already playing more.
Okay, I like that. This is hysterical. Their Twitter name is making me laugh. Their actual Twitter name is "So Over Christmas Already." Which makes me laugh a lot.
Well, it is amazing they started playing. They're one of the radio stations here started playing Christmas music in November.
Yep, not okay.
Like 2 weeks ago.
Funny. I actually did a Casey's Corner about this last week.
Oh, good.
Of how unacceptable it is to start holiday things before Thanksgiving. I asked a bunch of the guys in the locker room, and most of them agree with me, although now Keith Tandy, who is one of my favorite humans, dropped down in my book because he said he started before Halloween.
How did he justify himself?
He said he and his family.
Before Halloween?
You're preaching to the choir. I'm just the messenger here. I disagree with him. But he said that his family views all of it's a holiday season. Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas to him are all the holiday season, and they watch all the movies, all the music, all the everything at the same time.
Well, that makes no sense.
I agree. Thank you.
I mean,
but that was his
first of all, Halloween is not a holiday. It's a stupid thing that people dress up for. The other two are obviously family holidays. But you don't eat, like, you don't mix everything together. You don't take everything on your holiday plate and mix it all together and eat it all at the same time.
Some people probably would say that that's wrong, but I'm with you on that as well. But anyways, so that's their Twitter name, which I very much...
It's pretty good when you have a Twitter name that inspires a discussion.
We don't care about the question now. We just already got into discussion about that. So their question was, after Sunday's impressive takeaway display, what is the franchise record for takeaways in a single game?
I'm going to steal this. I didn't see that one yet. I'm going to steal this question for the mailbag, too, because I needed one more, and I can break it down a little bit better. But I happen to know this because for something I was writing yesterday on turnover ratio, I was looking at all our games with lots of turnovers, and the record is 8. The answer is 8. It was a game against Minnesota in 1990, I think, and the Bucks won with 8 turnovers, 8 takeaways.
That's pretty incredible.
We've had 7 a couple times, and that's actually – that used to happen a lot more because I've looked at these – around the league, these big turnover games, and the record is like 12. Can you imagine 12 in one game? But no. Those are all from like the 50s and 60s. The last team to do a 9 turnover game was like 1990. So I think teams have gotten better at avoiding turnovers.
That's incredible. Like I can't even imagine getting to cover a game that
we once
that
had a game against Pittsburgh in the early 80s where we had 7 takeaways and no turnovers, so a +7 ratio, and lost.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
How does that even happen?
Pittsburgh in 1983 was a lot better than the Buccaneers in 1983. I think it was 1983.
But even with all of that.
You needed 7 takeaways and no turnovers to make it close enough so the score was 17-12.
That's incredible. That's pretty phenomenal. Okay, John wants to know, what is it going to take for the Bucs to be able to beat the Falcons? I watched last night, and they look pretty unbeatable.
Oh, man. I know. It's so annoying. I watched the game, too. They were so good. Well, they went on that 3-game.
How dare they be good?
Right. Well, I came into the season. I know I was saying I thought they were going to be just as good this year. I didn't think they were going to have any Super Bowl hangover. I didn't see any reason why they were going to decline. I thought they made a couple nice additions that were going to help. They were getting Desmond Trufant back. But they started out well, and then they went on that 3-game losing streak, and I started to get a little bit of hope, and then now they're playing fantastic.
They're crushing
again.
Your hope again.
Yes. But that doesn't mean the Bucs can't go up there and beat them. We beat them up there last year.
Right. So John wanted to know
how.
How? Yes. This is why we pay the big bucks to answer these questions.
Well, first of all, we're going to have to make sure former Buccaneer Adrian Claiborne doesn't sack our quarterback 6 times.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Like he did to Dallas.
I actually asked when we had the radio show last night. We had DeMar Dotson and Donovan Smith on at the same time. And I asked them something about, as tackles in particular, I said, when you watch something like that happen, like, do you just hurt for that tackle? And they were like, yeah. And DeMar said, yeah, you definitely never laugh at anyone, like, having a moment like that because you know you could,
it could happen.
It could happen. He said, there are days that just aren't going your way. And he said, you never, ever laugh at anyone else's blight because you don't want the karma to turn right around
on exactly. you. Well, to win, the Buccaneers are going to have to win the turnover battle. they're probably going to have to run the ball a little bit better so that the offense can extend drives. And on defense, they've got to fix the problem they were having with their zone reads in the last game, because you can't just allow so many wide open players. You know, that was Matt Moore. We're about to face Matt Ryan.
Right.
And you really can't give him wide open looks like that. So those are the three biggest things I would look at.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Thanks so much for joining us. Continue to send your questions in for us all week. Use that hashtag Bucks Live, and we'll see you 75 minutes before kickoff in Atlanta. Have a great Thanksgiving.